Good morning, all. This is your host, Claudia Shambaugh, welcoming you to the September 17, 2013 edition of Ask a Leader. Yesterday, I want to wish all Mexicanos, Mexicanas, a happy Independence Day. That's the real day. That's not the St. Patrick's Cinco de Mayo day for Mexican Independence. Yesterday was the day, for starting with that El Grito outside the huge plaza in Mexico City. So many years ago, I'd like to remember what number that is. Today, we're going to have author, blogger David Nywert to talk about his latest book, And Hell Followed With Her. It's a bit of a seg from what Heather and Robert were just talking about. His book deals with the vigilante movement alive and quite well along our southern border. And then we'll have on UCI neurobiology professor Dr. David Cribbs. We'll talk about his neuroscience, some of which will be presented at the 24th Annual Alzheimer's Conference to be held this Friday in Costa Mesa. Don't go away. We'll be right back after a brief interlude. Welcome back to the show. Many of you have seen the recent cartoon situation in a rural border. I think it's a cartoon from Cucaracha. It's in a rural border town. It depicts two residents overlooking a hyper-militarized border security measures in action, and with the said couple ruining the quieter days when only a few undocumented workers were making their way through the land. Taking up this hyper-militarized status quo is my first guest today, David Nywert, author of And Hell Followed With Her, published this year, just recently published by Nation Books. David Nywert, raised in Idaho, earned his BA in English at the University of Idaho and studied creative writing at the University of Montana. He worked at newspapers around the Pacific Northwest from 78 to 1996. He went to work at MSNBC.com in 1996 as a writer-producer and continued there through late 2000, where he received the National Press Club Award for Distinguished Online Journalism in 2000 for a domestic terrorism series he produced there. Since then, he's focused on writing books and producing his blog, Orcinus?
Orcinus,
covering the crossover between the mainstream and the far right. The Northwest Progressive Institute named its annual awards region's best liberal bloggers after Nywert. He also writes for the political blog Crooks and Liars. He comes to us today from Seattle, Washington. Welcome to the show, David Nywert.
Thank you so much for having me, Claudia.
Well, I tell you, David, this book informed while creeping me out. What kind of reception is your book getting?
Well, you know, people who actually take the time to read it are enthralled and engrossed by it. It's
grossed
is
the word.
Amazing story. It is, unfortunately, you know, kind of an unpleasant and it's a story we, you know, it's confronting of some of our darker side of the American psyche, and so I think to some extent people have shied away from it. I certainly have had trouble getting it reviewed, but
really,
people who actually read it think very highly of it. And when it's been reviewed, I've gotten very good reviews. So,
and
I think part of it is too that it's hard to get media attention for a book like this because it's very critical of the mainstream media.
We'll get to that. We're going to open that all the way up, and that's as a summary reference because the media was one of the main characters in your book, I must say. But that we'll save for just a moment. But about your reactions, that some people are maybe a little defensive because of your calling it like it is in the how the dynamics played out.
Yeah, I think that it's. We have gotten to this stage in the discussion and the debate about immigration where we kind of forget where a lot of this talk came from. And people don't understand that when we're talking now about securing the border and border security, that this stuff all originated with these Minutemen down there. People need to understand that what this kind of talk does is it casts the whole debate about immigration into a life where we're almost fetishized about the supposed criminality of these people coming over the border, who are, in fact, more or less victims themselves of a seriously messed up system. which is what immigration reform should be about, is reforming that system so we're not criminalizing otherwise hardworking, law-abiding people, which is what the system does.
Well, I think, David, needn't pull punches about fetishizing. I think it's full-on fetishizing with how paranoid and how vividly the vigilante movement has depicted non-Aryan kinds of intrusions into what they see as a pure Caucasian American cultural societal arrangement. So it's, I think it's really, you get to call it fetish straight on. So what, and so we're asking about your the reactions to tell all any of the characters that you've been in contact with after the publication of the book. That what were their reactions? Did you get?
Well, if you're talking about Minutemen, the only reaction we've gotten so far didn't come to me directly. It came from Jim Gilchrist,
okay,
the man who empowered Shawna Ford. And he was asked about the findings, my investigative findings, by a reporter from the Southern Poverty Law Center. And he went on a rampage with this poor reporter for several days, called her up constantly and you know, was telling this person what a horrible reporter I was and how I was lying and so on and so forth. And, in fact, he also wrote into Alternet after we published these findings there and denounced me as a liar, but didn't actually specify anything that I'd gotten wrong, which is pretty typical for Jim.
A taste of that.
And he's made a lot of noises about threatening me, but I've certainly not heard anything personally from Jim Gilchrist or his people there in California. You know, all I can say is, I mean, part of the problem is he knows that we would welcome a lawsuit because we'd love to go through the process of discovery on this with Jim's own records. And moreover, he also knows that we have the records. I mean, I have...
Yes.
I have all of Shawna Ford's phone records and her emails, and it lays out very clearly that she was in constant contact with Jim Gilchrist.
And so. I just wanted to clarify for you, my guest here, that, David, that this microphone is in smack in the middle of the 48th Congressional District, where it was under a different number. I think we were 45 at that point, we're 45 now. We were the 48th Congressional District where Jim Gilchrist ran when there was an open seat in 2005 in a special election. So we're still sort of quaking in our boots about his political contributions, and he's still around, as you say. So,
sure.
And much of the vigilante fanfare would not be for all the important role that the media played in giving attention and therefore much oxygen, as you were referring to earlier, to the Minutemen movement. You make that so clear. Some media played more of a role than others, as you point out in the book.
Well, certainly CNN and Lou Dobbs played a dominant role in promoting these characters initially. It was a number of CNN reports, and it wasn't just Dobbs who was promoting them. They had a reporter named Casey Wyan who avidly reported on these border watches that Chris Simcox began organizing. Really back in about 2003 is when Simcox began doing this, and he actually late 2002. And he called it the Tombstone Militia, which caught my eye back then. In fact, my very first post in January of 2003 at my blog, Or Sinus, was about Chris Simcox, because these guys caught my attention, partly because I've been monitoring the extremist right for many, many years.
Yes.
Being out of Idaho, I got inured in that whole culture when we had the Aryan Nations folks up here. And so we were aware that the far right was planning to use the immigration issue as their chief recruiting tool from about like late 1998 on forward. We could see that this is where they were going. And, of course, the militia movement was one of their main efforts at mainstreaming themselves. And so this was something that we were watching very closely, and I was monitoring very closely the whole issue of, are we going to start seeing border militias? And so when Chris Simcox started up his Tombstone Militia back there in late 2002, it very much caught my attention. And sure enough, CNN comes along, starts promoting these guys, as you know, like straightforward citizens, instead of explaining that this is actually part of the militia movement, you know,
right,
was a problem right away. And then, of course, once Dobbs got the ball rolling, then Fox News was all over it, you know, and very closely. And Sean Hannity probably promoted it even more avidly than Lou Dobbs did, especially during the big April 2005 event when they launched the Minutemen Project as a national campaign to do this border watch. Instead of, you know, the idea of the Minutemen Project was to expand it from beyond these little border militia cells and make it a national thing where we had people going down and sitting on the border. And, of course, the whole scene in Arizona in 2005 was fabricated for the media. They put these people down there on the border in Naco in an area where there was not going to be any kind of actual human trafficking. I mean, they didn't put them in a human smuggling corridor. They put them in a place where they could get great photo ops of people sitting out watching the border and have the TV crews and the camera and the photographers come along and take lots of pictures. And in fact, there were really only, you know, they promised about 1,000 people or something like that would show up, and really only about 100 and between 150 and 200 actually signed up. And we had over 250, between 250 and 300 media people there. So the media actually outnumbered the border watchers there. But if you go back and watch that coverage from April 2005, you would never have known that from any of the reporters who were actually there.
I would go to that, but I'm afraid the NSA is going to monitor that and put me in a profile I'm not interested in being. But it was enough that the ones that I tracked down. But at the end, like, I'm going to say not good sociopaths, but like classic sociopaths that many of the adherents to the Minuteman movement, they knew how to play the media. They had their microphone on pitch, and then they had their microphone off engagement with each other, and they were not the same. They pulled no punches when they were together planning, but the media never saw that. But those like you, digging deeply, you definitely found that. Well, for those of you who've just tuned in, you're listening to Ask a Leader on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, streaming live in all grassroots movements, home sets around the world on KUCI.org, where my guest is author David Nye. We're talking about what his latest book, And Hell Followed With Her, is monitoring in the way of the burgeoning vigilante movement. Well, I'd like to have you. I'm not gonna give any spoiler alerts. I want for people to have a chance to get into the nitty gritty of all your research with these people in their own words and their sort of moment to moment kinds of organizing, moment to moment actual assaults and. So I won't go into that, but I would like to explore a bit about the trajectory of immigration policy, the lessons that we should be learning based on the research that you did for this book.
Well, really above it all, I think what I would say this book is a plea to for people to stop and think about how we talk about immigration. When we talk about immigration as a matter of, you know, well, do we give amnesty to these people who've broken the laws? What kind of laws are these people broken? Are they felons or are they, you know, and are they bringing crime over the border? Are they costing taxpayers millions? When we make it all about the people who have been caught in this vice rather than the vice itself, then we're going to be demonizing a bunch of helpless, vulnerable people, and that's what we do. That's what people like the Minutemen and the nativists do. And nativism has been with us for many, many years. Since the 1840s, when the Irish, the anti-Irish gangs are roaming the streets of New York, this has been what they do. They demonize people, they attack the vulnerable, and they leave behind a legacy of misery and suffering and death. I mean, and this, of course, this book recounts the really horrible death of a little 9-year-old girl down there in the border town of Aravaca.
Right.
At the hands of these Minutemen. And this was the, how can you, so in a lot of ways, I mean, a lot of why I felt compelled to write this book was for that little girl and for her mother, because I sat in the courtrooms. There were three trials in this case, and this mother who had her daughter killed while she laid there on the ground pretending to be dead,
right,
and listening to the whole thing. She was there for every single day of every court proceeding that they had in these three trials, and she testified three times. And she's just the bravest woman I ever met. And I just felt compelled that this story had to be out. But at the same time, people needed to understand the underlying causes, that this was what happens when you go down this road of demonizing people and fomenting hate, that you become so desensitized to the reality that these are human beings that you lose your own humanity yourself. And certainly in the case of Shawna Ford, I think that it's very clear that that's what happened. That she would go down this road, but it's not just her. She was part and part of that whole milieu that was fomented by the Minutemen, which was really all about, like I say, they claimed that it was about the border and securing the border, but they didn't care about the border. They cared about brown people coming over. That was what they were on about.
Well, and
that's
also
what they were always on about.
And how to fine tune your alpha part of yourself to be more the leader than the next guy in a slew of people who wanted to be the leader in this movement.
Oh, yeah. Well, because they all had huge egos. And it's interesting to note, of course, that this movement began falling apart within the first month of its creation. Even 2 weeks after they began the Minutemen Project there in Arizona, Gilchrist and Simcox were feuding so badly they wouldn't even speak to each other. And it wasn't just them. And, of course, it was endemic throughout the movement because it attracted angry, bellicose, paranoid, fearful white men who had huge egos and serious antisocial sort of behavioral issues. And so they just began bickering and falling apart really within months or within weeks of even starting to come together.
And a lot of them had abuse issues from their earlier development. So they were a pretty maimed lot, as it were. Well, the Tea Party, giving haven to the Minutemen movement, it's better funded than the Minutemen ever were. Will it be, do you think, David, better disciplined than any of the vigilante flanks? Do you think it'll continue to be forced to be reckoned with and enable perhaps to perpetuate the vigilante groups that have joined rank with them?
Well, I think what the Tea Party movement has done more than anything is served as a cover for legitimizing a pretty broad spectrum of extremism, including border extremists. But it's actually attracted within its ranks and has within its ranks large number of people that we would have called militiamen, especially back in the 90s. And it's the same people, and these are people who are filling the ranks of the Tea Party and, in fact, leading them in many regards. I mean, some of these Tea Party or some of these Minutemen leaders, notably Glenn Spencer, who was really the godfather of the whole Minutemen movement, this former California right-wing activist who moved to Arizona back in 2002. Spencer was the guy who was fomenting for border militias back in the 1990s. And he was designated, his organization was designated a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center back in 1992 for its overt racism. And it always has been. Spencer is now one of the leading Tea Party people down there in Arizona. He brings in Sheriff Joe Arpaio and Russell Pierce, these Arizona nativist figures, to help promote Tea Party events. What it's really done is that it's actually helped broadcast that message to a really large number of people, a much larger audience, and they have a much larger following now than they used to have, these extremists.
Well,
so I think that there is that, and that's the chief problem with them. I do think that, like most right-wing extremist organizations, they will always have the problem of maintaining unity because they do attract a lot of people with personality disorders, mainly because of the nature of their appeals, which are, you know, functionally psychopathic appeals. They're totally devoid of empathy. They're totally, it's all about scapegoating other people. It's all about, there's a great degree of paranoia and fear and anger.
And narcissism.
All of this all rolled into one ugly little ball in this Border Watch movement. And what actually happens is that they come together and they'll get this message out to a large number of people, and then they'll break apart and they'll form these smaller, more discreet cells that are actually much more dangerous, much more radical, and much more prone to violence. I've kind of reported in this book that I felt that the Border Watch movement was dead, but I'm getting reports even now from my sources in Arizona that actually there's still a lot of Border Watch activity down there, but it's now all these little, very small cells of four or five people who like to go out on the border and shoot immigrants, you know?
Well, I think with the materiel that is becoming ever-present there with the let's say a trifecta there. There's the federal enforcement under pressure in the immigration policy debate of arming further along the border. There are the drug cartels that have their own arms, and they're getting more and more sophisticated. And then the vigilante movement that I imagine we should project that increasingly will become a bit more threatening with the availability of airborne kinds of surveilling and missile firing kind of capacity. I mean, we've got a lot hovering over that border like never imagined.
Yeah. Oh, it's actually incredible how militarized the border is already. If you go down there, the Border Patrol presence is just unmistakable. They're everywhere because they're pouring in all kinds of money and staffing the Border Patrol like crazy down there.
Ironically,
they are. Some of that money has come over to the border up here in Washington State. And what the Border Patrol is doing up here was doing with that money for a while, instead of actually beefing up security along the Canadian border, which I can tell you is very lightly secured.
Right.
There's hardly any real security up there. I mean, a lot of places, the Canadian border up here is just a ditch that you can hop across.
Right, but where is the money going that you were saying instead of that?
Well, they're putting it into staff, into border, ICE staff and Border Patrol. And so what they've actually been doing with the staff is that they've been out harassing Latino mushroom pickers in the woods out here.
Oh, my.
Instead of... So they got sued by the ACLU for doing that, and they had to stop.
Well, it's probably no laughing matter, because the kind of vitriol that you've researched about harassing people at the day worker places, at the other employment, it's something they've had a thought to fine-tune. Well, I know that Jan Brewer's embraced those that are coming in. I was backtracking a little bit. I want to make sure. So they've been given a lot of legitimacy in their working through the Tea Party. It's a bit daunting here. There was another thing I want to bring up. Have you had more contact with Steve Johnson with No More Deaths, the people that are trying to assist the people coming over the border from the perils that face them in the climate that they're over the border?
I haven't had any contact with Steve, but I have been in touch with several of the border organizers down there. And, yeah, they're very concerned. They're saying that their water supplies are getting shot out by these militiamen, these border watchers that are operating in these small cells down there.
Where they leave jugs of water around.
Yeah, the people who go out and leave water for border crossers at water stations are having their water stations be destroyed by these militiamen. So, and of course, that's part of their philosophy. I had a lot of men tell me that they would, if they came across such water stations, that they would destroy the water or take it themselves. And, you know, because they believe that that's part of how you keep them from coming over. And at the bottom line, I mean, a few of them you'd even hear, we'd get quotes from some sources where, I mean, I've got one on tape where this guy says, yeah, if we just shoot one or two of them when they come over the border, that would stop them from coming over.
Well, you researched, there were many of them that said that. It's a kind of refrain, how to dissuade them. But it's, as you said, with NAFTA being a very structural kind of piece here to the depletion of cottage industries of local sustenance farming in Mexico, that there is a huge incentive still for people to keep crossing. And with undocumented children on one side of the border, the crossing is going to continue. It's really, it's an unwieldy saga going on. So.
Yeah, and it's all because we have a system that's really predicated in a xenophobic fear of outsiders. It was built back in 1924 with the 1924 Immigration Act, and that act was specifically about keeping out non-white invaders, as they were called, or aliens. And those people at the time were Asians. Who were widely believed to, it was widely believed in 1924 that these people, these Asians, would never become real Americans. And so that's where the term illegal alien comes from, because they were kind of seeing these Asians as not being, you know, like fit for American society. And that's still that was the foundation of our immigration system, and it's still the bones on which it operates. And it's still, we still, even people who come through legally have to go through so many hoops and fight through so many bureaucratic hurdles that it's just an incredibly unwieldy system, because we seem to believe for some reason that we need to make it hard for people to become citizens.
Right.
And it just, there's no particular logic to that. We should either admit people as citizens because we value their skills and want them here, or or they've proven up as citizens. And it doesn't, you don't have to make it hard for them to be here. So that old system, this old xenophobic system, is what we run our immigration system on now. And I think the best example of it is the fact that, you know, we have an economy that creates about 500,000, about 500,000 unskilled labor jobs every year.
And only 5,000, as you said, green.
Yes, right. We only issue 5,000 green cards to cover that.
So there's,
which is just insane.
Right.
And even now, our current immigration reform talk is, well, let's bring in these high-tech workers. Let's go for the, you know, let's bring in these high-skill workers instead of the low-skill workers. Well, we don't need high-skill workers. Those are the people. When we start bringing in H-1B visa people, those are the jobs. That's the immigration that actually does take jobs away from Americans. And instead, we need to be bringing in a lot more people with low skills who are willing to come in and do the work and want to become citizens.
Well, that David, that's a whole topic we could take up another time on the show. And I need to close now. And I thank you. For those of you that are interested in hearing more about this, David Neiwirth's blog is Crooks and Liars, and the book he's recently published is And Hell Followed With Her. Shauna Ford, I didn't really want to mention her name because she's gotten so much ink, so much press. I didn't want to dirty my microphone with such an individual. But that is all the time that we have. And David, I want to thank you for your thick skin research and writing this book, and of course being on the show today. Thank you so much.
Well, I really appreciate you having me on, Claudia.
Well, we're going to take it. This is part of what I was going to do here. We are going to take a break here after talking with David.